Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Today, I just want to tackle a couple of quick things that relate to Hitler. From time to time, as I go through various books and material, I come across some very interesting things. And it is worth pausing for a second and just having a quick look at statements that come out of the mouths of great white men. Really high intelligence, super high whites who know their stuff. And today I want to tackle this. I thought this would be a really good, fun topic to chat about, and to just cement in people's minds the way that Hitler thought. And the way that Hitler thought is backed up by history and science. And don't listen to any of the Jew crap that you hear. Oh, Hitler, so evil, he's so evil, so dreadful. Don't believe that nonsense, man. So there on the screen in front of you is our man Hitler, Emperor Hitler. And just to remind you that Hitler, before the war, etc., Hitler was a very, very slick, fancy, well-dressed, classy guy, hey? Don't be fooled by the fact that during the war, that he wore his corporal's uniform during the war to show his solidarity with the troops. Hitler, before the war, was a very slick, polished white man. He had class, okay? And don't believe any of the nonsense you hear about Hitler, that this man was some kind of deviant, okay? I'm going to tackle other white men as well, where I want to point out to you that white men have been lied about. I specifically want to go back to the topic of the lies that were invented about Napoleon and how Napoleon's reputation was saved, because Napoleon would very likely have gone down in history with a very bad name if it wasn't for certain things that happened. And I want to tackle that later, in the not too distant future, because it's an important topic and it has relevance for us now with regard to Hitler. Because you'll see that Napoleon was slandered to high heaven. They made up the most insane stories about Napoleon that you can imagine. The only thing they didn't do was they didn't accuse him of the genocide of the Jews. But I did that whole video about Napoleon and the Jews. But today I just want to show you a couple of things that come from Hitler, and also just want to show you the context in which it comes out. And then you also get a bit of a feel for Hitler as a human being, as a living person, and the Nazis as living people. And how are they? Though the most important topic today is going to be about how do you get your freedom. That's really the crux of what we want to discuss. But I just want to show you a few other things around it to give it all a bit of context, etc., and so that you get the most value out of today's discussion. The two people that we're going to be talking about the most today is Hitler and Mahatma Gandhi. And I'm not sure how many people know much about Gandhi, so I will very briefly and as quickly as possible give you just the very basic insights into Gandhi. Because Gandhi is the Indian who got India its independence. He's basically the founder of modern India. Interestingly enough, Gandhi actually spent quite a bit of time in South Africa. He spent time in South Africa before apartheid, but even then, the whites were all racists. Let's begin with two quick little videos. These are very quick little videos that come out and give you the normal storyline about Gandhi. We are not here to have deep discussions about Gandhi, but I just want to give you the basic storyline about him and the modern propaganda that they put out about him. So here are two little videos. And the second video, these are very short videos. The first video is almost 4 minutes long, and the second one is 2.5 minutes long. The second one is quite interesting because you will see film footage in Britain, and that the British have put up a statue of Gandhi, which is close to the statues of British heroes like Churchill, etc. You'll even see Nelson Mandela there as well. And then you'll see all these Indians who are now cozy with the British. But the bottom line is just to get a bit of a feel for Gandhi. Who was Gandhi? What was he? And what did he achieve? And you'll get a bit of an understanding of this guy. Then we're going to launch into a couple of other things and on to Hitler. Because I want to discuss what Hitler said about Gandhi and also what Hitler said about the British as well. So today you'll get a bit of a feel for Hitler's thinking and how Hitler saw the world.
Mohandas Gandhi, or better known as Mahatma Gandhi, is one of the most famous leaders and champions for justice in the world. His principles and firm belief in nonviolence have been followed by many other important civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela. Gandhi was born in Porbandar, India, on October the 2nd of 1869. He came from an upper-class family and his father was a leader in the local community. As was tradition where he grew up, Gandhi's parents arranged a marriage for him at the age of 13. His parents wanted him to become a barrister, which is a type of lawyer. As a result, when he was 19 years old, Gandhi traveled to England, where he studied law at the University College London. 3 years later, he returned to India and started his own law practice. Unfortunately, his law practice wasn't successful, so he took a job with an Indian law firm and moved to South Africa to work out of the South African law office. It was in South Africa where Gandhi would experience racial prejudice against Indians and would begin his work in civil rights. Once back in India, Gandhi led the fight for Indian independence from the British Empire. He organized several non-violent civil disobedience campaigns. During these campaigns, large groups of Indian population would do things like refusing to work, sitting in the streets, boycotting the courts, and more. Each of these protests may seem small by themselves, but when most of the population does them at once, they can have an enormous impact. Gandhi was put in prison several times for organizing these protests. He would often fast while he was in prison. The British government would eventually have to release him because the Indian people had grown to love Gandhi. The British were scared what would happen if they let him die. One of Gandhi's most successful protests was called the Salt March. When Britain put the tax on salt, Gandhi decided to walk 241 miles to the sea in Dandi to make his own salt. Thousands of Indians joined him in this march. Gandhi also fought for civil rights and liberties among Indian people. Mahatma is a term that means great soul. It's a religious title, sort of like saint in Christianity. In India, he's called the father of the nation and also Bapu, which means father. Gandhi was assassinated on January 30th of 1948. He was shot by a terrorist while attending a prayer meeting. Live as if you were to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were to live forever.
Parliament Square, home to Goliaths of history. Winston Churchill, David Lloyd George, Nelson Mandela, and now, Mahatma Gandhi. The champion of Indian independence stands face to face with the Houses of Parliament. Gandhi became the voice of a nation, celebrated by millions, including the hundreds that turned up for the unveiling.
It's a really good honour to be here, to be in front of Mahatma Gandhi and standing there.
He was one of the greatest people on earth as well as the people who are here.
It is all because of we just wanted to chair India in Britain, in London.
Gandhi's legacy was forged by his non-violent campaign for Indian independence from British rule, a cause that in 1931 brought him to Britain, where he stayed in poverty-stricken East London and in his trademark dhoti met with mill workers in Lancashire.
I shall carry with me the pleasantest memories of my stay in the midst of the poor people of East London.
The British announcement of the so-called peace statue, made on a visit to India last summer, has been questioned as it came within days of a £250 million agreement to sell arms to India.
In this great square.
Unrelated, says the government.
I think it's irrelevant, I really do. As I've said, this is about people-to-people ties. And let's not forget as well, you know, we've had the Indian Finance Minister here today unveiling the statue alongside our Prime Minister. And that is also about, you know, the people ties, how we can also support India's growing economy.
This statue celebrates the incredibly special friendship between the world's oldest democracy and its largest.
Words that contrast with how this figure of passive resistance was viewed by a man whose statue stands yards away. Churchill once called him a half-naked Bakir. Now carved in that iconic dress, he stands across from the heart of British democracy, a reminder of a time when the relationship between the two was more tense.
Okay, now for some comments after those two short videos. In the first video, when they say that Nelson Mandela learned from Gandhi and that Nelson Mandela also practiced nonviolence because he learned it from Gandhi, that's a total lie, total and utter lie. That's not true at all. There's nothing about Nelson Mandela that was nonviolent. In fact, Nelson Mandela was the exact opposite. Nelson Mandela was the bringer of violence to South Africa. My own theory is that the Jews managed to convince Nelson Mandela to get violent, and they assisted him in getting this thing off the ground. And right throughout his time in prison, etc., he was even offered a chance by President P.W. Botha to get out of jail on the condition that he renounces violence, and he refused. So don't buy into any of the rubbish that Nelson Mandela was nonviolent and that he was like Gandhi. Not at all. Nelson Mandela was a hardcore communist, and he remained that way all his life. Just a few points about Gandhi. Notice Gandhi is born in India, but Gandhi gets an education in Britain in the time when India was part of the British Empire. How bad could things have been that a guy like Gandhi can go to Britain and get a law degree in Britain? And then, due to him not being able to get work, he ends up in South Africa. And then he finds himself in South Africa among Indians who've actually been in South Africa for quite a long time. The story of Indians in South Africa is British. The British brought Indians to South Africa. Now, the British brought the Indians to South Africa as slaves, actually. That's how they got here. And then they ended up staying here. So they've been here for a couple of generations. Until recent times, South Africa was the place outside of India that had the biggest Indian population in another country outside India. The actual population is round about 1.9 to 2 million. So it's actually less than half of the population of the whites of South Africa. But the British also brought other Asiatics to South Africa, including people known as Malaysians or Cape Malays. So these were people that the British brought to South Africa and used them as labor in the British colonies. And this is something that we can look at a bit more as we talk about South Africa, because it is the British who brought these Asiatic non-whites into South Africa. Some of the coloureds are not just mixed race. Some of the coloureds are actually Cape Malays that then mixed with whites and blacks and so forth. But all of this was British stuff. On the screen in front of you, next to the picture of Hitler, you will notice that I've got a photo of the young Gandhi and an article from 2015 about whether Gandhi was a racist. So this is where some of this racial stuff becomes really quite interesting, because some of this stuff, to my amazement, actually rebounds a bit on the blacks. I have noticed that the Asians seem to be the non-whites because of their higher IQ. They are the non-whites that are more observant about blacks. There have been Chinese, for example, in Africa who have pointed to the blacks and told the blacks how useless they are. So one of the interesting twists in this story is that the Asiatics may be the ones, because of their higher IQ, who actually start seeing through the blacks. And I just want to discuss a little bit of that before we get to Hitler. What follows is another short video. This is from a, can you believe it, Canadian Indian named Russell Peters. And this Canadian Indian does a skit where he talks about South Africa. So this Canadian Indian doesn't know that there are Indians in South Africa, and he gets here. He overstates it. He says, oh, there are millions of them. No, there's like 1.9 to 2 million of them. But if he arrived in Natal, which was a British colony, then yes, he will see lots and lots of Indians there. The Indians in South Africa live mostly in Natal, but lots have also moved to Johannesburg. So like in my suburb, we've got quite a lot of Indians living here as well, among the whites. But in this skit that Russell Peters does, he does a skit about the fact that, you know, can you believe Indians were brought to South Africa as slaves, and he makes a good joke about that. But he also actually starts joking about the blacks, and listen to how he mocks the blacks and laughs at the blacks. And the thing that I've seen about all these non-whites is they've all been conditioned to hate white people and to shout racist at whites. But when you leave them alone and you watch their own behavior and their own minds processing what they see, you'll start to see that they are starting to behave like racists. They start seeing the differences between each other. And yet, they will never think that they are racists. But you'll see that they are noticing things about each other. So one of the possibilities in the future, as things move forward, is that the blacks will slowly lose the battle everywhere. That the blacks will not only be caught out by liberal whites, but that the blacks will, in the fullness of time, also lose a lot of their sympathy and support that they have received from Asians, because the Asians will start seeing them as being lower IQ. So that is something in the future to keep an eye on. Oh yes, and a final thing that I forgot to mention is that Gandhi, after he got Indian independence, he was only the Prime Minister of India for like about a year before he was assassinated by another Indian who had been a supporter of his. And it had to do with religious stuff. So he had claimed he was going to, you know, unite all the religions, etc. And then he didn't do it. And then this guy came and like shot him at point blank range and killed him. Fired a bunch of bullets into him, I think 3 shots or something into his chest, and killed him. You know, so when you look at these other races, just watch how they don't necessarily always see eye to eye. And my prediction is that in the future, this is going to get worse. And the big losers in the future will be blacks. Blacks are going to be the biggest losers in the future. Mark my words. Everywhere. And it could even be that Jews will come off second best in some cases because of Israel. Anyhow, here is Russell Peters, and I've got to hand it to him. He is freaking funny, actually. So watch this and watch his skit when he talks about South Africa. It's quite hilarious. And then just notice his racial observations and his racial jokes. I think if a white man had to make those jokes, then a white would be accused of some kind of racism. But because it's a non-white, everyone just lets it go.
Oh, man. I've been doing a lot of traveling. I just came back from South Africa. I was in the motherland. Not my motherland, obviously, you know what I mean? It's black people's motherland, you know. I'm Indian, we have our own motherland. England, you know. The night I came back from South Africa, though, it was funny. I was doing a show the same night I came back, and I'm on stage, and I go, yeah, I just came back from South Africa. Some drunk white lady in the back of the room yells out, yeah, man! I said South Africa. Yeah, man! That friggin' Jamaica. She'd be better off shouting out. Some people don't like to laugh at that joke. They think it's racist. You ever see that movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy? Yeah, remember the first time you saw that little African brother movie? You were laughing your ass off, weren't you, huh? The first time I saw the movie, I was like, man, whoever wrote this is brilliant. I went to South Africa. That's a real language. I didn't know that, man. I'm in my elevator in the hotel. These 3 African guys get on board. They're having a conversation. All I hear coming out of their mouth is, Seko Suna Seneba. And I'm standing there like a jackass laughing at them, right? I can't believe they really talk like that. Then I almost got into a fight with them because I was eating Pop Rocks and they thought I was swearing at them. Got very tense in that elevator, man. Freaked me out when I went there, too. You guys ever get a chance to go to South Africa, it'll freak you out. You know what freaked me out when I went there? I got off the plane, there was Indian people. Not one or two. Millions of us. And here's the thing, Indian people have been in South Africa for like 6-7 generations now. They've been in Africa longer than they've been in, white people have been in Canada. Ugh. Well, it's true, they've been there for like 6-7 generations. Here's the messed up part. Indian people were taken to South Africa as slaves. Who the hell uses an Indian slave? Do I look physically ready to do hard labor? My people don't work that hard. Give us a calculator, we'll do your taxes, man. My people don't like doing physical labor, man. Could you? We'd make shitty slaves, man. Imagine how pissed off the first slave owner was. All right, Raj, here's what you're gonna do. Get in that field and pick that cotton. No. No. I can't do it. I can't do it. I hurt my back. Let me tell you what we'll do. Okay? Okay, you pick the cotton. And I will get the t-shirts made. And together, we can wholesale it. We don't do hard physical work like that, man. Why do you think you don't see very many Indian athletes? You think I see an Indian guy in the NFL? Okay, down, set, hike, hike. Go, run, run. Run with it. I'm waiting here, go. Faster, faster. We are winning.
On the screen in front of you are two screenshots out of a couple of screenshots that I took from 2007. Those are screenshots from South African TV that I put on my old African Crisis website. And what actually happened was on a TV news program, they had this Muslim guy, and I think these guys had written this book called Gandhi, a Stooge of the White South African Government. Can you believe that? And the bottom line was that they were saying that Gandhi was a racist. Anyway, I had a couple of screenshots, which I'm not going to bore you with, but this was on ETV in South Africa in 2007. So here were these Muslims pointing out that, you know what, if you dig into the history of Gandhi, you'll see that he said quite a lot of negative things about blacks in South Africa. So when Gandhi was in South Africa, he noticed that the whites looked down on everybody and that the whites were racist, but that there were levels of racism, that the whites regarded the blacks as like the worst and then the Indians as a bit better. So that was what this whole thing was about. What I can't remember, because I never dug into it further, what I can't remember from this book is whether they went into a conspiracy theory that Gandhi was working with the whites, but you can see from the title it says Gandhi, a Stooge of the White South African Government. So I don't know what the finer detail of their theory is, nor do I really care. But anyway, they were pointing out that Gandhi was saying some nasty things about the blacks when he was in South Africa. And here on the screen in front of you, you can see that in 2015 in India, they had this headline, Gandhi was racist and a British stooge, claims new book. New Delhi, Mahatma Gandhi, who fought against apartheid and white supremacy in South Africa, was racist and thought that Indians were better than Africans, asserts a book by two Africans of Indian origin. So that may tie back to the 2007 story. Anyhow, the bottom line is just to show you that now you've got some who are pointing out that, yeah, Gandhi was racist and he saw blacks as being worse than Indians. So, you know, the truth about race is a thing that is going to fester and it will remain here. In fact, Nietzsche actually predicted this. Nietzsche actually predicted that there would be wars for centuries to come over exactly this issue. And the main takeaway for you is just to know that some of these races are starting to notice things about each other. Inside South Africa, when I was in the normal corporate work environment, I saw even more examples of coloureds noticing stuff, all these other races noticing stuff about each other and either mocking each other or laughing at each other. But nobody ever thought, they never saw their own behaviour as being racist, yet they are in their own minds starting to observe their own differences. And where this will eventually play out is that in the fullness of time, you will start seeing these differences actually causing bigger and bigger clashes in the future. And in South Africa, in the violence of July 2021, which I need to return to and I need to do a proper video about that, the blacks set out to kill Indians and Indians ended up killing blacks. So I got to tell you that I think that you are going to see more and more stresses in this big global multiracial world as time goes by. You are going to see these other races starting to get irritated with each other. And all of it will be stuff that's built up among themselves. Whites will not have caused any of this. And of course, it's good for whites because it means that stress between all the others works for us. Don't you believe that Africa or the rest of the world is going to be happy and they're all going to be singing Kumbaya until the end of time? Not at all. We are returning to reality slowly. Now let's turn our attention to Adolf Hitler. This photo that you see in front of you, this photo is of Adolf Hitler meeting the Duke and Duchess of Windsor in 1937. And look at the Duchess of Windsor. Look at that smile on her face. She doesn't look like she's scared of an evil man. She seems like she's really, really happy to meet this awesome guy. And look at the Duke of Windsor. He's also looking pretty happy. Take a look at the photo on the screen in front of you. Here you can see the Duke of Windsor actually doing an inspection of Nazi troops during his visit. There he is, and he sees the Germans, and he's busy with like an inspection tour during his visit. And I don't see anything that indicates that this is negative or bad. These whites are just carrying out the standard practices that are allowed for international diplomats. It's all looking good to me. I will leave those two photos on the screen in front of you for the duration of my chat about Hitler, because I think the body language of Hitler meeting the Windsors I think the body language speaks volumes, especially the Duchess of Windsor. I really do not see anything that indicates anything except genuinely enjoying each other's company. I think her face speaks volumes. If this was just a very sour kind of a meeting, then you wouldn't see big wide smiles like that. And this is in 1937. I did put out an audiobook some time back about Christa Schroeder. She was the secretary who worked for Hitler the longest, and she wrote an excellent book about her time with Hitler. And the link to that audiobook is in the description below the video. But when you put out a whole audiobook like that, there are many different things inside of it that is just too much information and people won't notice it. So that's why I thought I would tackle specific topics that are important in various books. I want to read a section that leads up to a discussion about Gandhi. But I thought what I would do is also read from a little bit earlier, a page or two earlier, because it'll give you a bit of a feel for what life was like at that time with the people who were with Hitler. Because I'll tell you something, when I read history, and I've read lots of history, I've read lots of European history, from the Romans, Julius Caesar, Napoleon, and then you have these scumbags, and I think scumbag is the correct term. You have these scumbags and filth, like these Jews, who are busy trying to control the thoughts of white people. And so then they come and they say, you see, these people are evil, etc., etc. And when you actually go and you read real history and you find out what the people said about each other, you don't just have to read one person's book or get one viewpoint. You can read different books by different people, and out of it you will actually get a very interesting story, and you'll see what are these people like. And I think especially of Hitler, and I also think of the Italian, Machiavelli. Hitler and Machiavelli, and then to a slightly lesser extent, Napoleon. And all of these filthy garbage who read our literature and our history, they then come and they say, you see, these people are evil. Like, they also say that Machiavelli was evil, but Machiavelli was actually just an honest bloke. And that is what you will find about all of this European history, is that these people, when you go and you read the magazines and all the commercial, capitalist, Jew, liberal junk that is put out there, that you'll walk away with the impression, Machiavelli, he's such a demented, evil Italian. No, actually not. Actually not. Just a straight bloke looking at life the way life is, telling you how to live life, how to do certain things. Machiavelli was a guy who wrote about how a prince should conduct himself, and how he should rule people and run his country. And when I look at Napoleon and all the interactions that those people have with each other, you pick up all kinds of things. And suddenly you find that these are lively white people. They are living a life pretty much the way that we do. They've got their ups and downs. Some of them will argue with each other, etc. But at the end of the day, they are living normal lives, and in many cases, they really get along well, or they stick together and so forth, and they have respect for each other. You'll see them as human beings. So that's why I'm going to read from a little bit earlier, because in this particular section, there are some fun things and you'll get a little bit of a feel for what life was like. So I'm going to read from this section, which starts as follows. Hitler also enjoyed light classical music, such as The Merry Widow, Die Fledermaus, and another one that I can't pronounce. It's called Zigeuner Baron. Just forgive me on that one. Okay, let's continue. A number of the male guests preferred to retire to the lounge on the evenings when music was to the forefront. Let me just pause there. This is about all the guests that Hitler has in the evenings. He's got lots of guests, and they come, and then after the dinner or before the dinner, they behave in certain ways. So that's what this is about. That's why some of these men go off to the lounge, because they want to talk. They're not interested in the music. Let's continue. The frequent confrontations between Heinrich Hoffmann and Julius Schaub seemed to be provoked by the music. If the argument became too loud, Hitler would send a manservant to the lounge with the request either that they should reduce the volume or return to the fireplace where everyone else is sitting. These occurrences would often remind Hitler of awkward situations which tended to develop at musical presentations when his escort did not like listening to the music. So listen to this. You're going to see a bit of the fun side of Hitler. So Hitler speaks. Whenever I visit the opera, I have to take care that my officers do not snore. One day during Tristan and Isolde, Heinrich Hoffmann nearly fell over the ledge out of the box. I had to wake Schaub up to tell him to give Hoffmann a shake. Bruckner was behind me snoring. It was dreadful. Hitler was very good at telling anecdotes like these, and everybody enjoyed listening to them, even Eva Braun. So let's just pause there. So here's the fun human side of Hitler, and he's telling some stories, and people are laughing and smiling, and they understand, yeah, you know, these kinds of things happen. And in, let's call it, proper European society, we have our standards and we have to behave. And so we don't want people snoring and, you know, embarrassing themselves at the opera. So anyway, it continues. If conversations were mentioned of which she, Eva Braun, disapproved, this would be immediately evident, and then even Hitler would notice. He would stroke her hand resting on the arm of her chair, whisper a few words, and then she would disappear upstairs. This would also happen if she thought that Hitler was paying too much attention to another woman. So there's a little bit of insight into Eva Braun and Hitler and how they behaved. And, you know, the girly side of things. And she doesn't like it when he's too attentive to other women. And all of this stuff is far removed from all the crap that you hear about what a weirdo Hitler is. Oh, he's such a weirdo. He's a sexual creep, etc., etc. It's completely not like that at all. Anyhow, here's another fun one. This one gets quite fun and naughty. Listen to this. At New Year 1938, Gretel Slezak gave me a letter to hand to Hitler privately without anyone seeing. Let me pause there. Gretel Slezak is actually an actress, and she seems to be wanting to get together with Hitler. But I believe that Gretel Slezak was a little bit Jewish as well. But Gretel Slezak is famous. So anyway, she continues, as he was about to leave the hall, I detained him. Once all the guests had gone below to the bowling alley in the basement for drinks, he took my arm and strolled up and down with me in the great hall. So how's that? Hitler takes the woman's arm and he's walking with her, arm in arm, up and down in the great hall. She's his secretary, but she's also well-dressed, as you'll discover. My evening dress of roe deer, brown fluffy material with a small train added to which my silver fox fur cap must have looked magnificent, supported by a small tipsiness which I had got from the dinner, lent me a large slice of self-confidence and courage. For after I had handed him the letter, I broke into hymns of praise about Gretel Slezak, which must have seemed close to an attempt at matchmaking. Convinced that he must share my opinion, I finished with, Eva is nothing for you, mein Führer. So here's a whole bunch of girly sexual stuff, okay? Now listen to this. Instead of annoyance at this impertinent remark, Hitler looked at me in amusement and replied, but she is enough for me. Enough? Where was the great love of which so many writers have been in the know since 1945? This seems to be what Gretel is writing from modern times. Clearly, my attempt at matchmaking that New Year's Eve amused Hitler no end, for he made no move to leave the hall. We had been alone together for rather too long, it seemed, for Eva Braun appeared suddenly, gave me a scowl, and said in hurt tones to Hitler, where have you been? We are all waiting for you. So there's a little bit of naughtiness that's going on there. Naughtiness, but people are happy. Little boy-girl stuff going on. Let's continue. Hitler did not forget this episode. For a few weeks later, he brought it up and said to me with a smile, that night you had a certain something. That night, the New Year's Eve photo was taken in the great hall before the fireplace. It was the last New Year's celebration at which so many guests would be present, because the war will start in 1939. Now let's continue. Another unforgettable experience in the Great Hall was Hitler's dictation of 11 May 1941. Despite innumerable attempts, a plausible explanation for the flight of his deputy Rudolf Hess to Britain eluded him. He tried out all the possible motives he could think of and tried to encapsulate them in words, but nothing seemed to fit properly. Only when he viewed the flight as the act of a madman did he seem satisfied. I had never known a dictation to cause him so much trouble as this one. So that relates to Rudolf Hess and his flight to Britain, which was pretty much the end of him. British caught him and locked him up for the rest of his life and never allowed him to go out and never allowed people to talk to him. So you got to know there was a whole bunch of stuff hiding there. Anyhow, now let's get on to the stuff that gets to the British and Gandhi. Hitler was a great admirer of British colonialism. In 1926, he had told his closest colleagues, "It is not my wish that a pearl should fall from the crown of the British Empire. It would be a catastrophe for humanity. Let's just pause there. Isn't that an amazing thing to say? That if the British Empire went down, it would be a catastrophe for humanity. For the whole world, hey? That is how Hitler viewed the British Empire. Isn't that amazing? But I will tell you, I've been reading other memoirs. There's another memoir that I'll be drawing a lot of things from. And I must tell you that you will be amazed at the love that Hitler has for the British. It is so disgusting to think how the British talk about Hitler. But if you see what Hitler said to other people over and over again about the British, you will be astounded at how much he liked the British. And there were other guys like Rudolf Hess. These people totally believed in the honorable nature of the British. They completely believed that the British were a fine people, that the British would not turn on them, etc. I have come across so many references where some of these Germans really liked the British a lot. And to think the propaganda that's been put out from World War II onwards, it's unbelievable. On to Gandhi. So after this section where it says it would be a catastrophe for humanity if the British Empire should fall. In the pre-war years before World War II, when German public opinion was very favorable towards the Indian independence movement, he said, "I forbid my people to go along with this Gandhi nonsense. One does not win independence with spinning wheels, but with guns." So let me repeat that. This is what Hitler said. "I forbid my people to go along with this Gandhi nonsense. One does not win independence with spinning wheels, but with guns." From several of his statements, it was possible to conclude that he thought of an alliance with Britain as the most ideal solution to the problems of world politics. He considered the Royal Navy and the German army in combination to be a power factor sufficiently strong to give world politics a new foundation. In the 1920s, Hitler had begun writing a book about foreign policy. She's probably referring to the book known as Hitler's Second Book. I have looked at it, but it's not that impressive. But yes, it is about foreign policy. In 1939, shortly after the British declaration of war, he said to Hess, "In my presence, all my work is falling apart. I have written my book for nothing." I believe that Hess was the only person to whom he had explained the ideas developed in this manuscript, and that Hess, because of his intimate knowledge of Hitler's thinking, undertook his flight to Britain. Let's just continue and then I'll return back to these points. The Great Hall was often the venue for interesting events, visits, and conversations. Hitler, this refers to the photo in front of you, Hitler was very impressed by the visit of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. In the afternoon from the office window, I saw Hitler with the couple on the terrace, apparently pointing out to them the various mountains by name. The Duchess wore a simple dark blue woolen frock of excellent cut. She looked chic and impressive with her hair center parted and styled in a bun. Undoubtedly, she made a lasting impression on Hitler, for in the evening, he said she would definitely have made a good queen. He saw in the Duke a friend of Germany and regretted that he had not fought the establishment rather than abdicating. particularly since he could have relied upon the sympathy of the working class. So, some stuff from Hitler and how happy he was to speak to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor and how highly he thought of them. And I will tell you, it's not just Krista that tells these stories. These stories are in other people's books as well. Lots of arguments over the British, where Hitler is pro-British. But where Krista may be wrong is that Hitler did speak to other people about the British. He may not have said exactly those words, but he did speak to other people. And in those other books, it's even more detailed discussions about the British. And if I recall regarding Rudolf Hess himself has got a strong connection to the English and a total belief in the British. He has a very strong faith in them as a people. And from what I've seen, it does not surprise me that Rudolf Hess flew to Britain. He genuinely believed in the British, and what they did to him is just disgusting beyond words. So let's return to what Hitler says about British colonialism and this Gandhi nonsense. What he's referring to is, with this reference to spinning wheels, is all this Gandhi non-violence. And he says, one does not win independence with spinning wheels. And it's also interesting that the German public opinion is favorable towards India and the Indian independence movement. And Hitler's saying, no, no. He forbids his people from going along with that crap. He rejects, you know, with contempt, this rubbish that Gandhi wants independence from the British. He says it's a bunch of rubbish. But he also makes an interesting point. He says one does not win independence with spinning wheels, but with guns. Though, in the fullness of time, after Hitler is dead, by 1947, the British do indeed start handing over their empire. And in 1947, they give India independence. So ultimately, Gandhi does get it. But it is only the British and the British moves on India and with the rest of their empire, where they just hand over their entire empire to everyone else, including the blacks, that you actually see people getting countries for free. Prior to that, this stuff never happens. And even other Europeans, like the French, the Portuguese, the Belgians, etc., as I've mentioned before, all the other Europeans, they don't give away countries. It is only the British that did this. So prior to Britain just handing over their empire, and I'm convinced, I will return to this another day, but I'm convinced that the British saw that their entire empire would revolt against them. That's why they did it. They knew they were going to lose, not just in one place. They were going to lose in dozens of countries. They'd be chased out of dozens of countries. So they handed it over because they were going to lose it anyway. As you can see, Hitler was totally opposed to Indian independence, totally and utterly. But the key point that he says is you do not win your independence with spinning wheels, but with guns. And therein is an important statement from Hitler that is historically valid. It is only these non-whites in the period after World War II, with the British giving away their entire empire. This is the only time that people get countries for nothing. In all other periods of time, you've got to fight for your freedom. And for white people, whites have never gotten any kind of freedom except with weapons. White people don't get freebies. White people don't get anything for free. If whites want it, whites have to fight for it. So, like all of Hitler's statements, It is something that is supported by history. It is true, and that's the key issue here. He just tells you that this is the way these things are. That comment by Krista that Hitler saw the Royal Navy and the German army as something that could work together and could change the world. You know, that is a very interesting line of thinking. And that kind of thinking could have worked. There is no question about that. If the British and the Germans had worked together, the British had a massive navy and the Germans had a massive army. And the Germans struggle from the various problems of building a big navy. But if Germany and Britain worked together in the time of Hitler, you know, the Germans would probably easily have gone to help the British fight to retain their colonial empire. I am certain of this because that is the kind of guy that Hitler was. He would never have wanted to see the British going downhill, and the Germans would probably have willingly worked with the British to go and smash anything that is going to threaten the British Empire. I have sat and thought many times about how powerful Europe can be if even two major European countries would form some kind of military alliance, some kind of tight alliance, even nowadays, like the Germans and the French. That could also be something. If you look at the power of those European nations, despite their small size, and they just work together a little bit more, they would easily pack a punch that can match that of Russia or China. Easily. And in those days, I think Hitler's thoughts were way ahead of his time. And just sit and imagine what things could have been like if the British had worked with Hitler. Because, like I say, if it had been up to Hitler and the British were losing in India, he would probably have said, no problem. You know, if you want some divisions of the Wehrmacht to come and smash the Indians and kick them into line, you know, let's go for it. I am certain that Hitler viewed these things with that level of importance. Imagine how different the world could have been. The British Empire would be around, Europe would not have been smashed, the Germans and the British working together for the benefit of all. Wouldn't it have been a whole different world to this rotten mess that we are in these days? Another point worth mentioning is Hitler's view on the Duke of Windsor. This is the guy who later abdicated because of his wife, because they didn't want him to marry a commoner. And Hitler actually says he wished that this duke had actually fought the system inside Britain. Instead of just abdicating as a king, why didn't he fight the system and remain and be the king of England? Because Hitler was sure that the Duke and Duchess of Windsor would make a fine king and queen. So yeah, some more thoughts, you know. Don't just quit and run away. Stand and fight. That is typical Hitler thinking. It's typical Roman thinking. That is the correct thing to do. Don't just let people walk all over you. But as you saw in those videos earlier, you know, what did the British choose? The British chose to rather work with the Indians. They still have got close ties to the Indians today. I tell you, the British think like Jews. These people just don't think in racial terms at all. And I really find it frustrating when I look at the things that go on in Britain. So those are the thoughts of Hitler regarding Gandhi. And, you know, Hitler was dead before the rest of Africa was handed over to blacks and the whole British Empire disappeared. But it gives you an insight into his thinking. Hitler would never, ever have approved of any of the events that took place in Africa after World War II. He would have been horrified by all the stuff that went down. If only Hitler could have seen that just a few years after his death, the whole British Empire would just collapse. And look at us here in Africa and all the things that went wrong for the whites of Africa. If Hitler had been left alone, I would still be living in British colonial Rhodesia. It's that simple. And the Boers would still be running South Africa. Everything would still be the same. Instead, all this other crazy nonsense has taken place in the meantime. And the Americans have added to the madness. All this embracing of the lower humans, embracing Jews, embracing blacks, and look at the mess that the world has become. And I'm going to show you more stuff about Hitler that will indicate to you that Hitler had no plans whatsoever to start any kind of war at all. Hitler's vision of the future was a vision of peaceful European progress and the Western world would be stronger than ever. There would never have been any of that slaughter. The slaughter that we call World War II, that thing was created by Jews. We will return to that. You can slice it how you like it, but every damned thing that you've ever heard in your life about Hitler in the mass media has been a bunch of pure crap. These people were decent people with good ideas. They thought about the world in a reasonable way. All of them, including guys like Rudolf Hess, etc. These people were good people. And I've gone through lots of different memoirs and I will still pick out others where you can see stuff. And you will be amazed at what these people were really like. Meanwhile, all you ever heard after World War II is, oh, the evil of the Nazis and the evil of Hitler. All rubbish. Total nonsense. These are just people trying to do the best they can in the world according to how they thought. And you'll find that that is true for all whites in all ages. It's that simple. So when you ever hear stuff like, oh, this lot is evil and that lot did that, or, oh, the Spanish were evil, then all bollocks. All of it's rubbish. Whites are whites and whites behave the same at all times. There is no difference to the way the Romans thought or the French thought or the Prussians thought. Or the Austrians thought, whites are simply living their lives, thinking up their best plans, and trying to work with that. As you saw in those videos, there is an insane love of all these so-called heroes like Nelson Mandela and Gandhi. But if you look at the screen in front of you, I found mention that even Winston Churchill, didn't think much of Gandhi. Churchill described Mahatma Gandhi as a seditious Middle Temple lawyer now posing as a half-naked faker. I went and checked. A faker is really a kind of semi-spiritual kind of con man, if you could call it that. They claim to be spiritual, but they're really busy playing games with you. Fakers do things like walking on hot coals, lying on a bed of nails. They claim to do levitation, snake charming, and that kind of stuff. So they do their sort of magic tricks and claim that they've got special powers, etc. So that is what Churchill was basically saying. And I think Winston Churchill would probably be turning in his grave if he had to realize that, you know, one day the statue of Gandhi would be close to him, you know. So what kind of an empty outcome was that for Churchill, hey? Just shows you how totally messed up the Western world is. In the same way that people have pointed out how many of those white men who fought in World War II, were there on D-Day, etc. How many of them would have liked to live in the world that they actually helped to create? That shows you what comes from listening to Jews, eh? And let's take a look at modern India versus Britain. And again, if you think race doesn't matter, etc., etc., well, take a look at this. India is a subcontinent. The population of India is 1.4 billion people. Just sit and think about that. 1.4 billion people. That is 20 times the population of Britain. 20 times the population of Britain. And in physical size, 13 times bigger than Britain. So it is 13 times bigger than Britain and has 20 times the population of Britain. And these are higher IQ non-whites. So you would think that they are a superpower in the world. But let's take a look at the GDP. And yet, despite those massive size differences, look at the GDP of the UK versus that of India. In fact, it's only in the last year or two that India's GDP has exceeded that of the UK. You know, if that doesn't speak to European and British excellence, then I don't know what does. I can't understand that the British cannot see that they are better than these other nations and races that they ruled. At the end of the day, I think it's just diplomacy and business deals and all that kind of stuff. But the lengths to which they go in order to deal with these people is just amazing. But I think the British are really hooked on trading. They are really hooked on international trade, and the Americans are the same. But for the British, it's a total way of life. Napoleon called the British a nation of shopkeepers. So I just cannot understand why the British need to bring in non-whites and Indians and let them pour into Britain and make them feel at home, etc. I don't see the point of it. But the British are clearly constantly playing their global game, and they are so tied in knots. And America is a nation that thinks exactly like that nowadays. I just can't understand that the British cannot see themselves as superior and better than all these non-whites that they're constantly pandering to. You know, did they have to go and like put up that statue of Gandhi? Well, at least you got some input from Hitler and some thoughts from Hitler. I think Hitler would not have tolerated any of the weirdo stuff that's been going on all over the world outside Europe. He would have thought it was lunacy. He would probably have thought it was absolute lunacy, the kind of stuff that's gone on since World War II. If he'd had to have known that this is where we are going, that it's just a world of total madness. So that's it for today. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.
If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you will.